Hello and welcome to the EV Cafe Takeaway, that podcast focused on a zero emission future that we all hope for. And this week is a slightly different episode because we are recording live at Fleet Mobility Live, and I have the lovely John Curtis with me today.
Hello, darling. Are you well?
I am well, John, and I'm very, very excited to have our guest, which you've all worked out who it is, because he is sat right with us, and it's great to be in person with the wonderful Stuart Murphy from the Royal Mail.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, sir. Now, Stuart, we've had a little bit to do with each other over the last couple of years, and I've been very excited to see the journey that you've been on personally, which you've shared at a number of different events and things like that. But for those people that have lived under a rock, because they will have to have lived under a rock to have missed the wonderful Stuart Murphy, tell us a little bit about where you are currently working and how you got into this wonderful world of electrification.
Okay, so I'm currently the head of fleet transformation at Royal Mail. I've done a few years of Royal Mail now, many a job, and somebody said we needed somebody who could do electric vehicles, and at that point I think I was the only one in the business that had done anything with one. So they said, right, you can get on with it, and 4 years later I'm still here and I'm still doing it. So yeah, it's been a journey.
Let's get into that journey, Stuart. I mean, because, you know, you're one of the few people that were doing something with it. But so you were in an operational role before this. How long have you been with the Royal Mail, man and boy?
Oh, well, actually, I started when I was about five. So my dad actually worked for Royal Mail. So I used to get taken in on school holidays and things and just told, there's a letter frame or a parcel frame, go and sort some letters. So, yeah, paid by Mars bars, which was very exciting. Not so good for your dental thing, but, yeah. I mean, I got to know the business quite well, and yeah, it worked through education and everything else. And then one day my dad said to me, we're looking for new talent. And I joined Royal Mail in 2003, and I've been there ever since, done many, many jobs, operational, run mail centres, run operational units and everything else. And like I said, I just evolved into Royal Mail were looking to do EVs on a small scale, and it just happened to be where I was. So I got heavily involved in the start of the deployment of that, and then we ended up with Optimise Prime, which was a predominantly a load balancing project to look at how we could do that mainstream. And then it's just evolved from there. And yeah, a few years on, and I'm still doing it.
If you operate a fleet of cars or vans, you'll know electric is the future. Transitioning to EVs can appear daunting, but with Europcar, it's effortless. Our long-term EV rentals eliminate the upfront costs, contract commitments, and uncertainty. Instead, you'll get total flexibility, a wide choice of cars and vans, and Europcar's expert support. So, make the switch without the stress and experience Europcarma. Search Europcar Business.
So let's get a sense of the scale of the task that you've undertaken. You have to deliver letters, parcels, packages to every location in the UK, which must mean that you have the most diverse range of kit to electrify. Give us a sense of that range. What are you dealing with?
So there's roughly about 32 million houses and whatever you want, yeah, addresses in the UK that we have to get to. Some are on islands and we have to go over on a little boat. Some we have to get the mail via boat to them, and then, yeah, the deliveries take on from there. Yeah, we've looked at flying mail and all sorts of things to try and get it there in the most cost-effective way we can. But, yeah, if there's a letterbox, we have to put letters in it.
So presumably you have things that are... So you have everything from delivering by foot, bike, van, small van, medium van, large van, truck, aeroplanes, trains, drones,
So we've actually stopped using trains very recently.
Wow.
So majority of our mail is actually moved by road, which makes electrification that little bit more important for us. And yeah, we do fly some stuff because we're time critical. And then it's picked up at the airports by the vehicles and then moved on. So yeah, we are very timed in terms of our service. Getting a mail from lands into John O'Groats in a day is really tough. But we do it day in, day out.
And drones?
We've tried droning. In terms of it, anything that will make life easier in terms of somebody clicking that button at 10 o'clock at night saying, I want that item, to it coming the following day, however easy that is, that's what we're trying to make it for the end user. So whoever you use, if they use Royal Mail as their courier service, we're trying our best to make it as easy and as clean as possible for the end user.
So let's talk about that cleanness, that electrification process. So, I mean, obviously the cleanest way to deliver a vehicle is with our lovely old feet. And the local postie van stops at the edge of our village and they walk large chunks of it. So, that's a really good thing. But talk to us about that process of electrification that you've been on for, 4 or 5 years? And you can perhaps update us on how many electric vehicles that you've got on the road, etc.
Yeah, so in terms of what we call our final mile fleet, we're getting close to 8,000 now on the road. And in terms of the way we work, you're absolutely right. Majority of our vehicles, when they're out, they stop start. Which, if you think about a normal ICE vehicle, terrible stop start. You end up with particle filter issues left, right and centre. And actually an EV loves those sort of duties. So, you are absolutely right. The basis in which we work and our green footprint, so to speak, is walking. We are recognised for walking up and down the streets. The friendly postie at the door. And we don't want to lose that. But what we also want is to make sure that everybody's getting their mail on time. And the reliability that we've seen in our EV fleet against our diesels in the way we use them is astronomical. Which is why we're putting more and more EVs in. It does work. And we've done a lot of work in terms of total cost of ownership and things like that. And again, the EVs are working, are outpacing the diesels at the moment.
Which is great news, and I think this would be news to many people, because many people think that electric vehicles are always going to be more expensive and that they will be, costing the earth, but not in the same way, but, expensive. But I know also that you're beginning to explore the world of trucks as well and beginning to get down that road. How's that progressing?
Yep, so we have our truck installation for their infrastructure should be live this week. And in the next couple of weeks, we should get our first truck deliveries, and we're talking 40-ton trucks. Really excited to see these. We've done a lot of work. We're the only company in the UK that use predominantly double-deck trailers. So trying to understand get somebody to explain to me how it's going to work with a double-deck trailer that doesn't like wind. It's quite a challenge. So we've actually had to simulate how it's going to work. So I'm really keen to understand how we got our calculations correct, what's going to happen when we strap that first double-deck on the back of one of these trucks, how's it going to perform. And, of course, everything on the road looks better in red.
I've got this nagging thing going on in my head saying congestion. Because one of the things that you need is to be able to get along the road as easily as possible to your destinations. One of the things that stops that is everybody using their car, their van, whatever it might be, for stuff which isn't essential. And part of that is that we all order stuff online that we want delivered tomorrow, whether we need it or not, we're going to have it tomorrow. it's a societal problem, but we are driving congestion through our biobehaviour, that impatience. At what point does it become your issue that you've got millions of parcels to deliver, which you believe are time critical, but actually they're not, and could be phased, could be moved in a different way? Or do you just get on with doing the job and don't think about those big philosophical challenges?
So in terms of it, the customer pays for a service. So yeah. We have a number of services that they can choose, and whatever service they choose, whether it be first class or second class, that's what they've asked for. Yeah. So it's important for us to deliver that promise. The moment they click that button and they say, I want this tomorrow and I want it by this time, you're getting it by that time. That's how we work. Yeah. So yeah, and we're driven to make sure that we deliver that promise. Because the last thing you want is if you said you're going to get that parcel by 2 o'clock that day and it turns up at 3 o'clock, you're going to look at it and you go, it's not as nice that product now. It turned up an hour later, is it?
So I'll get that.
It's all part of the process. It's all part of working with our customers to ensure whatever service is on that parcel or that letter, that's our aim to do it.
Over the last couple of years, I've got to know Stuart the person as well. And I feel that I can really trust you with this job. There's not many people that can tackle a job this big with this much at stake. You know, these parcel deliveries, the reputation of the Royal Mail and stuff like that. I was going to say, how did you become such a trustworthy person? But talk to me about what you were dreaming about when you got older, when you were a kid. You know, was it as simple as your dad did this job and you looked up to your dad, therefore?
No, I mean, in terms of, I'll take you back when I was 13, my parents got divorced. And that really changed me as an individual. So I grew up hugely over that time. Didn't have my dad there anymore. Lived with my mum and my brother. And it was this 13-year-old kid that had to grow up because my brother was going through the same things and dealing with it in different ways. My mum was left on her own. And I always remember about that age, I went to the careers officer at school and she said to me, what do you want to do? And I said to her, at that time, I did my job experience in a car body repair place. And there were two elements to this. One, the gentleman I did my job experience with said, there's no money in this, don't do it. Yeah, it's a terrible job, don't do it. And secondly, I started to think about my career and what I wanted to do. So I went back to that careers officer and said, right, I'm not staying at school. I'm going to college. I'm doing this course. I'm going to uni. I'm doing this course. And then I'm going to stay on at uni and I'm going to get a degree. Because I didn't want to do the degree, the 3-year process. I wanted to do it. So she said to me, is that really how you're going to do it? I said, yeah. And I'm going to do it in business. And she said, why? Because I want to go through education and I want something I can actually use at the end of it. So a lot of my friends did history degrees, geography degrees, things like that. They use absolutely nothing of that in their day-to-day life. I use my business degree all the time, every day. And to start with this job, you absolutely need to care. Right? That's the starting point with this. You have to care about what you do and you have to care that every decision you make could affect 32 million households. That's the responsibility you have. And the fact we deliver things like pharmaceutical items and stuff like that, if that doesn't get there, you're affecting somebody's life. So it's really important that I do everything in my power to do this. Now, I have to say I have a really strong team behind me that do a lot of the day-to-day stuff and everything else. The EV deployment doesn't happen with just me. There is a team that are absolutely, how do I do this on a day-to-day basis? And I'm you can, for want of better words, I'm probably the face of it, but there's so many people behind the scenes that, yeah, go into getting an electric van into operation in Royal Mail. And not only that, I deal with the operation day to day, so my team are the interface between fleet and operations. We're just going through the transformation of our telematics system, which we're wiping out four different systems and putting one in place, and that's across every vehicle user in Royal Mail. So that's different companies that use the fleet and everything else. So that's a huge transition for us. But it starts from caring, and it starts from saying, actually, if we're not doing something right, let's put it right, and let's go through the pain of putting it right, and yeah, let's go through the pain of getting the grey hairs that I've got plenty of now. Yeah,
well done.
I know. I mean, I'm not doing too well for a 25-year-old, but I'm, just for men's looking good at some point. I'm just picking my time, but it's all about continuous improvement for me. And a continuous drive. It's boring if you don't continuously improve. Yeah, you become stagnated and everything else. And we're on a journey, like I said, we're nearly at 8,000 EVs. We've got 50,000 vehicles to do. So there's a huge amount of development that we can still do to make it better, to bring people still on that journey. And that's key for me. And the moment I get stagnated, I'll look at my career and go, right, where do I go next? But at the moment, there's still lots to do.
So I just want to go... You've mentioned that you care. You touched on, obviously, an important life-changing moment, you know, in your early life. What has made you care? Because those experiences can take us both ways, can't they? They can take us into being angry and, you know, they can affect us negatively. But it seems that you've taken something really, really positive and it's in you that you care and you want to make a difference. What is that? What drives that?
Well, look, I know my parents split up and everything else, but actually from an early age, six, I started playing football. I was the captain. I was the leader, and I've always been that person. I've always had the loud voice on a football pitch. Yeah, the centre-back that dictates and everything else and tells people where to stand and, yeah, when to head the ball and all of that sort of thing. And that's always been, yeah, I suppose I've got my dad to thank for that. I wanted to be a striker, but he said, no, you're a centre-back, son. Get back there and start defending. So, and in terms of it, it's always been, there's always been a drive in me to lead, to be able to influence people, and I've really embraced change. Yeah, throughout my life there's been change, and you either, like you said, you either deal with it and go down the wrong path, or you actually say, right, okay, that's affected my life, how do I deal with that? Yeah, what am I going to take from that, and what am I going to do either differently, or actually it pushed me into a place where, yeah, Everything's okay. And let me be clear, Paul, I've got a fantastic family around me. Yeah, I can't go on these podcasts without thanking them. I've got three wonderful kids. I've got a wonderful wife who, yeah, supports me and lets me get on. And when I am doing the stupid hours and working late at night, she'll bring me a cup of tea rather than complaining. So, without that, yeah, I probably wouldn't be here. you've got to have that sense that you're doing the right things. And I keep saying to my team on those deep, dark days where we're looking at one another going, is this really, yeah, are we going through this pain for a reason? I always say to my team every day, it's a sunny day. Yeah, if you look up, you might see a grey cloud, but behind that grey cloud is the sun shining through at some point. And that's what you've got to remember in life. And if you work hard enough, the grey clouds move aside and the sunshine comes through. And that's the way we work.
I was talking to Catherine, new into Volvo, before we started this podcast. And I said to her, why have you come? She came early and we hadn't started. And she said, I'll come back. She was keen to be here. And I asked her why. And she said, because I'm new to the EV industry and I want to soak up the things that are happening now, the learning that there is in the industry, so that I can benefit. And as a leader, that's one of the things you deliver. What are the things that Catherine needs to be mindful of, and the things that are quick wins that you have learned as you've gone through your journey?
You want me to answer that one? Blimey. I thought, check out the next podcast. I think, look, the EV journey is difficult. Let's be clear. I said it earlier. If you think about an ICE vehicle, it's 100 years in the making. Yeah, it's a half-decent product. And we've gone through that journey. EVs are about, 5 years, really, in their making. And I think if you look around, you'll still see a lot of ICE influencing the way the vehicles are built and everything else. The manufacturers have got a bit of work to do, I think, to get to where we really need to be. But I always refer back to the change curve in the way I deal with people. And you've got to understand, I think the change curves have about 5 steps on it. And if you push change on people, you'll go straight to the negative part, which is denial. Right? Yeah, I don't want to do this. It's all too hard and everything else. If you take people on the journey and say, right, try it, have a go, see how it goes. Yeah. You're more likely to get them to the point where they become an influencer. And I've got 26,000 drivers that have gone through EV training. And I've got probably 26,000 influencers now in Royal Mail that will say to somebody, you know what, these are nicer vehicles to drive, they're automatic, they're not manual anymore, yeah, they don't break down like a diesel does, and all of that sort of thing. And that's been really key. If you ram something down somebody's throat, they're always going to say to you, yeah, there might be acceptance of this time, but the next time you say to them, yeah, please do this change, they'll go to you, I remember how you treated me, and I'm not doing it this time. Yeah, you got me the last time, not this time. And it's all about how you treat people, and it's all about how you say to somebody, actually, yeah, I'm not forcing it, I'm asking you to do something, have a go with it, see how you get on. And every time I've done that, no one's given me the keys back.
Do you know what? It's something I talk about every time I speak on this subject. This isn't a job about vehicles necessarily, or software, or charging, or any of the stuff that you see here. For me, this is about people. And you clearly understand psychology and how people operate. Nobody's ever come back to you and said, no thanks, not for me, because the technology's fit for purpose. The charging, fit for purpose. The software works. That is the biggest enemy change has got. And you seem to have found a way to make change happen, and people want to support that. How do you do that with 26,000 people?
Well, I think there's a lot of work done in the background. So how do these things work and everything else? And it's knowing your subject, and it's being able to explain to it. So I'll give you the example. I've got New Milton Delivery Office, which is my local delivery office. It's got 8 vans. And I walked in one day and I said to the drivers, look, you've got me as your... Yeah, down the road, you need a BEV now, come on. And they've got about, I'd say about 30 drivers that use the vehicles from day to day. And a few of them come up to me and said, nah, not having this at all. And I said, okay, yeah, I'll bring in a couple, have a go with them, see how you get on and everything else. And I had one driver who was brilliant. Roger at New Milton said to me, Stuart, I can't take your vans. And Paul, no, because we tried to give him a different van. And he said to me, I can't go through the forest. I'll rip it apart. Yeah, I'll go down dirt tracks and everything else. And I said, you know what, Roger? Fine. I'm not going to give you a vehicle. I'm going to give you one to try. I'm going to give you one to test. And you're going to tell me what you need. And then I'm going to see if I can get it for you. Roger got his new van last week. It's higher suspension. And I saw him out on a route, and I went to him, and you're right, Roger. He went, brilliant. And that, to me, is what I do and why I do it. And those people in the New Forest now get a far more reliable service because they've got a far more reliable vehicle, with an even friendlier Roger on its delivery, because he's got a new van. He was driving around in a 66-plate vehicle, which was a higher suspension, but we just couldn't get him one. And I said to him, right, I'm not going to change it. I'm going to wait until I can get you one. And the moment I could get him one, I got him one. And I actually went with somebody to pick it up for him the other day, and we dropped it back. And the amazement for it was, he went to me, said, I'm not going to drive it today. I said, why is that, Roger? He said, I had my EV training a few months ago now. I'm going to take it round the block today, and then I'm going to use it tomorrow on my delivery, because I want to make sure I look after it. That is fantastic, and I'm well up for supporting that in my business.
Fantastic. And this is the journey that we're on, right? Finding the right technology and learning the solutions that work for each different element. Are you okay to talk about the challenges of finding the right suppliers, new things coming along? Because we shared an experience together where it didn't quite work out. And it can be quite detrimental. We've all got the memory of Arrival in the background as well. And of course, a fleet like yours is often a target for people that want to prove a big point and obviously make it commercial. How's that experience been for you, and how do you see the future on that?
Brilliant. It's look, let's be clear about it, okay? I sit here today and I don't know all the answers. So I'm looking for people to help me on my journey. Yeah, I'm developing, I'm learning, and looking for new ways to electrify this fleet. As John said, diverse and in every way. And therefore, people are looking at me and saying, right, what's the answer? Well, I don't know that all the time. Yeah, I'll have a go, but I don't know it all the time. And therefore, I'm looking for other companies that have got new ways of doing it to try. So, yeah, the experience we had together, I learned loads. Yeah, I learned that it wasn't the right vehicle for us, but I've now learned and developed, and we've now put the right vehicle in. So in terms of it, yeah, there will be other companies we'll work with that are not quite at the same level as the normal recognised brands. But if I can help them on their way and they can help me on my way, then why wouldn't I? And yeah, like I said, it's I've got to stay relevant, and I've got to stay up and understand what options are available to me. Because, yeah, unfortunately, I can't soak them all up at the same time. So I do need people's help from time to time.
How does the organisation cope with innovation? Because, you know, the Royal Mail's been around since the horse and coach.
Yeah.
So it has a long history of trying and testing things. But it doesn't like risk very much. How do you cope with going to an organisation and saying, you know, we want to try this new approach to something? Are they able to be welcoming of that, or is there still some resistance to change at the very senior level?
I think we are becoming more flexible in our approach. Yeah, we've got to understand. Yeah, the horse and coach worked 500 years ago. Things evolve, and yeah, you've got to look at, yeah, we're in a modern world, and people want things in a different way. And if we're rigid in our approach, we won't be here for the next 500 years. And I think certainly, yeah, our leaders of our business understand that. Understand certainly when it comes to an EV and the EV journey we're on. It's here, it's the future. Yeah, our customers like the fact we're delivering cleaner vehicles. And, yeah, unfortunately, I can't get them everywhere at the same time, but I'm working on that. So yeah, we are far more open to the change, and it's my job within a large organisation like this to be able to influence those key decision makers and say to them, this is my thought process, this is what I've done, I've come to you at the right point where I need your help to get this moving in the business. Yeah, and it's knowing those key times to say, right, yeah, I'm ready, I've got the product, or I've got the service we need that's going to, yeah, take us to the next level. And of course, yeah, we're no different to any other business. Money is, yeah, you've got to make sure your money and your calculations stack up. But in terms of it, if you've got the right change for the business, the money stacks up and everything else. Yeah, people are willing to listen to me.
And that's my final question for you, actually, is around the cost. So what have you learned running 8,000 electric vehicles in comparison to running comparative 8,000 ICE vehicles? What is the true difference?
Well, we're quite lucky because we self-maintain and we've got roughly about 120 workshops across the UK, we get the full picture. So unlike if you take a lease with service and maintenance on it, you don't see how much that's really costing you. We do. So we pay for our own technicians, we've got our own workshops, we've got our own overheads, etc. And for us, yes, the vehicles are more expensive in their starting point, but actually the full package and the maintenance and everything else, yeah, we're seeing some real benefits. Yeah, the vehicles don't come in as often. And I was talking about this earlier. It's not just the cost of the postie. It's not just the cost of the vehicle. It's the management time that you have. If you've got a depot of 100 ICE vehicles and you're constantly having to do DPF regens and things like that, that's management time to look after all of that. With an EV fleet, you haven't got that. You press the button on the vehicle, it goes, it comes back again, you stick it on charge. Yes, you've got to do a bit about charging and everything, but when you look at the whole, because Royal Mail are putting depot charging in as well, you haven't got that, I've now got to give a fuel card to somebody to go and fuel the vehicle up or anything like that. It's charged overnight, you come in the morning, you go. You come back, you plug it on charge in the morning, it's back again and away you go. It's as simple as that. And we've made fleet management a lot simpler for our managers, which they absolutely love. And yeah, I've got them all queuing up now. When am I next on an EV journey? Yeah, and yeah, one of the big turning things for us is data. We've put 8,000 odd vehicles in with very limited EV data. So I'm fixing that as well and making sure that we've got the right data flow so people can understand while the vehicles are out, how much charge they've got, when they're going to come back, how much charge they've got, which van goes on charge, which one doesn't, and all of that sort of thing, which actually at the moment we can't do. It's very much that one goes on day one, that one goes on day two. Even if they don't need charging, that's how they work. Don't deviate from that because it will go wrong. In the future, it will be a case of, well, actually, van number one can go on charge, but van number two, three, four, five, and six, they can wait for a week. Yeah? And that's critical to us. So I've always said, yeah, in order to make us that absolute EV fleet, we need data and we need to give our operational managers the right tools to run this fleet properly. And that's what we're starting to do.
Charging seems to have been something that you're solving, or, you know, in terms of delivering at your depots. I don't know where you are on solar and battery energy storage. I'm sure it's on your radar at some point. But do you see the Royal Mail becoming a service with regard to charging as well? Because we're hearing lots of talk about charger sharing. So depot charging is a great opportunity to do that. But I understand that obviously your sites are quite secure and, you know, that in and out. Is it something that you've considered? Is it something you can see happening? Or is it just something that's not possible?
So you are right. Our sites are secure and they're secure because we're carrying people's mail. So we've got to be careful. Our starting point is to make sure our red fleet has got everything it needs to charge. Absolutely, we've looked at sharing charging infrastructure because I don't think the UK can do everything it wants to without that. And that includes, yeah, us in that mix. Yeah, I think there will be an element of depot charging, depot sharing. And certainly we're open to those conversations and how that will look.
It's comforting to know, because I think it's something that, you know, if you guys think you can do it, then I think most people should find a way around most of the challenges. So that's good. We have a closing tradition here on the
He's going to get me to do something silly now, everybody, isn't he? Here we go. Yeah.
I promised you I wouldn't, and I won't. But we have... Oh, gosh, it's gone.
It's to your left.
Oh, it's to my left. That's it, OK.
Last time I was out on stage, you got me to stick my tongue up my nose, didn't he? Blame my nan for that. She could take her false teeth out and do things with her tongue. So.
See, I was going to spare you. I was going to spare you, but listen...
I probably shouldn't have said that.
You should not have said that. So you might want to use this. Use this wisely. So, in the absence of the magic wand, here is your magic wand. So we have a closing tradition, and that is to hand you a magic wand.
Okay.
And then you have to use your imagination in the same way that you do when you read the books to your kids every night. And you now get to use that wand. Now, you can shorten your tongue if you wish, but you might want to use it for something else. What would you use the magic wand for? One wish. We've had world peace. That's all done. We've had a personal chef. That's been done. What about something in between?
I'll be sad. Okay. So in terms of it, if my company car is up for renewal at the moment, so I want a car that enables me to get all three kids, including the car seat, in the back without them being cramped, that can do over 400-mile range. There you go.
Well, OK. Any answers out there, anybody?
And it's not a van. It's not a van.
Yeah, it's not a van. Yeah, for all those that think they might have an answer, come and have a look. Yeah. Well, there you go. That's your wish. We'll take the one back for the next guest. But, Stuart, listen, it has been a real joy, hasn't it, John?
The Royal Mail deals with things that really matter, actually, to everybody in society. And we found that out during COVID, how important not only the receiving of letters and parcels is, but actually that contact with the postman.
Absolutely.
The human being who does something so vital for all of us. And what I've discovered from you, Stuart, is that you have done your apprenticeship. You've learned your craft in theory at university. You've then taken that and developed a whole approach which is totally people-centric, open-minded, prepared to accept challenges and deliver on the things that you believe in. And it's heartening to think that somebody like you has that vital task of electrification for the post office and for Royal Mail in your hands. I'm thrilled. Thanks, mate. Really appreciate it today.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Nice having you. I feel very privileged to have walked a little bit on your journey and remember the first time I heard you speak. It's always a great privilege and a pleasure to hear you speak. You are very engaging and as you have been today. And I know that the industry values you and people like you sharing your journey. So we're grateful for that, because we do want a zero emission future. We do want Royal Mail to lead the way and many others to do the same. It's an encouraging thing, and I'm thrilled to have got to know you a little bit better today. Thank you, Stuart. Thank you for being
here. No worries. Thanks for your time.
So everybody, that has been Yes or Feel Free. We're live, everybody, so there's people giving a round of applause, and rightly so. This has been the EV Cafe Takeaway podcast, and you can get many more of the podcasts on the website. So head over to the website. There's over 130, John, I think. Yeah. Wow. Lots and lots of wonderful people, and it's really great. And you can learn something from Stuart today and from many others on the electrification journey as we celebrate the ecosystem for electrification. So in the meantime, everybody, have a great day.
Thank you very much.